see a lot of familiar faces out there. I've been around this industry for 20 years and see lots of people I know. And one of the new things I see around, lots of new faces. That's really nice. Enjoy meeting new people and seeing that we're not just getting fewer and fewer, we're lots of new people. That's really nice. The old ancient Chinese curse is maybe live in interesting times. I think we are living in interesting times right now. And what I'm going to talk about today is the rules of the game have changed in what we've been doing for the last 20 years. With the housing crisis, but the finance crisis, all of that are causing us to do things we haven't done in years. Remember back in 1987, the stock market crash and all this stuff, talking about listening to radio shows and reading about a lot of the Lehman Brothers and Merrill Lynch's models that never talked about or took into account that property values would ever go down. They hadn't gone down in almost 40 years, so their models didn't go that far. Thus, we're at some of the best. We always have boom busts. I remember buying and selling my house down in Fresno, my first one, during the boom and selling it during the bust. Good lesson for a young guy to learn about what goes on in the market. We had the tech boom and bust in the tech stocks back in the late 90s, early 2000s. And historically, there were booms and busts about tulips back in Holland. Tulip bulbs would be going for equivalent of thousands and thousands of dollars, and then 2 weeks later, worth nothing. So we've had those. Hunt Brothers back in the 80s trying to promote the silver market. Silver went up to $50 an ounce, and then, back about 2000, I think it's a little over $2. So a real loss there. Grain, soybeans, and corn just this last year skyrocketed. Some of my friends that are still in agriculture stopped growing sugar beets and rice and went all in corn. They're doing pretty well. For example, this year, prices are down. So it's something we have to deal with, the boom and bust side. And it just so happens this one's affecting us as far as working with real estate. It added thousands of homes to the rolls. I remember working with quite a few of you, swamped months behind trying to catch up, trying to do the first merge parcels together, then subdivide them up, things like that. We had escalating property tax revenue because prices were going up. It was really great for the tax rolls. We were getting pretty flush with money. And like I said, strained existing resources. Lots of work. We weren't really adding on staff. We just had more work to do. So not too much of that kind of business is a good thing. It's job security and lots of good things for us to work with. But all good things come to an end. August 2005 was the peak in the housing boom, and from there it went downhill. Lenders got creative. They were just starting where the red mark is the option arms, where you get to pick your payment on your house. So you could say, this month I didn't want to pay zero, or I only wanted to pay the interest, or I wanted to pay 3 months worth of payment. A lot of people chose zero, and their loans slowly got bigger and bigger and bigger. And those are starting to reset into a fixed percentage starting right about now, only about a month ago they started. So these 2 years, 28, have fixed, all added to the size of the loan, and then early on, of course, interest plays a major part in any loan payment. So when loan payments went from 1,000 to 3,000, or more, depending on the size of the loan. So people can't afford it. Therefore, we're in the foreclosures. California, just last month, over 101,000 homes went into foreclosure. I think we all know what that means for the assessor's staff. They go back and reassess them, because they sell for about between 40 and 65% of what they originally sold for. If the tenants didn't get the inside, a lot of things like that are happening. That's one out of every 134 homes in California. That's a lot. When we think of my county, 140-some-odd thousand parcels in there. Divide that by 134. That's a lot of homes. That's a lot of work that we're going to have to deal with. And, of course, the West Coast, some of the other areas. Florida really should be there. If you see on the far one, that's where we're hard hit. We're out here on the West Coast. This just came from last month, where some of the filings are, mostly down south. San Bernardino, Riverside, Kern. But if you look up the Central Valley, Merced had the dubious honor of being one of the top foreclosed cities in the nation last month. So a lot of that's going to cause work for us. We have to change some of the ways. Second home sales, forced sales. Inventory is down. It was 11 months at the beginning of this year. Now it's down about 7.7 months. A lot of that is because they've slipped into the forced sale, repo, or bank home. Things are not, of course, technically up for sale. So, but we're still going to have to deal with that. And that's from Data Quick back in 2008. We're already down 5.2% on a year-over-year. It's going to get worse. So what does that mean locally for us? I look at the paper every day. I took a picture of it right there. You can see all the trust, the homes going into trust, into foreclosure. There's pages and pages and pages of it. You hear about the subprime desk, the financial desk on the front page every day this week in my hometown. You go to Realty Track and put in your address, you can see all the bank owned or going into or going to homes. It's a little scary sometimes. I look around my neighborhood, a couple blocks over, there's a couple of brown lawns. Bank owned houses, they turned off the water, all the landscaping is dying, all that kind of stuff. What's that do to assessed values? It goes down. So what's all this doom and gloom mean? I didn't mean to stand up here and be a real bummer and a real down as one of the last speakers of the conference today. But it's going to be more work for the appraisers and more work for you in managing the maps, managing those parcels. With Prop 13, when the Prop 13 base value is less than the market value, we've got to do a rollback back to Prop 8 type values. Our county, Stanislaus County, did announce a rollback. I know several other counties have for property taxes. Less money coming into the county, tighter budgets, tighter sales tax. I was at a city council meeting last Tuesday, taking my son there for Boy Scouts, and they're talking about $2 million we're having to cut from just our city money, let alone the county money. So fewer staff, empty headcount, not getting filled in. More work for you with less resources. So how many homes? We're already off 15%. They say we're going down 50% in value in some areas. It's going to be huge numbers we're going to have to do. So less staff going to be around. For the appraisers, lots of trips out in the field. We're going to have to get smart about going out and not going over to this side of town and then over in this other city and over here and over there. They're going to have to map out where they're going to go. More map updating. Lots of abandoned subdivisions reverting back to the owner. I've talked to some farmers in our area. About half of them are going to keep it in the way it's subdivided. Some are saying, well, you know what? I know it's an expense and it's a pain, but I think I may just undo all that, roll it back to the way it was before I got involved in real estate, and just stay farming. It's doing well right now. We're going to plant more corn. So what's that mean to you? More work. You've subdivided all those lots. You have to go through the hassle of either combining them into larger lots or whatnot. And I know it's an expense for the owner, but they may want, they're starting to do that. And then one unique one that we're going to start to see as we bottom out, vulture funds. People pooling their money together in a mutual fund type of situation, going in and buying land. And then they'll buy it and then try to reconfigure it, repackage it. Take these five parcels and this one, split this one, add it in here, buy these, you know, mix and match, throw it in the blender, and come out with something that they might think is sellable. So you're going to see a lot of that coming down. More so in Southern California, where they're trying to, this is commercial, and this is this, split this off. People are going to be getting creative, like they got creative with loans. They're going to do the same thing with land. So that means more work for you. So multiple trips to do, have to do comps. We don't want to waste time and gas. With gas cheaper now, but it's going to go back up, at least if you read the papers. We need to do coordinated dispatch. Sometimes we can just buy doing it in our head, but with so many new subdivisions, new road names, getting those appraisers out there. So we need to create pin maps of where they go and do it over and over and over again, because these are the people we need to see. All those pending properties in the table that you've got Megabyte or some of the other ones out there for managing your information, they've got tables that say these are the properties here are pending reappraisal. We want to be able to do that in an efficient manner. So more mapping with less staff, and like I talked about, more uniqueness for you guys. That's what's going to happen. So what's this mean? We need to be efficient. It's kind of an overused buzzword. We've seen it in the CAD area. We've seen it in the GIS area. We need to be more efficient. It kind of loses its effectiveness as a word when it gets overused. But in dispatching, we need to be able to go out there and do as many properties in a given amount of time and do it in the same space for the appraisers. I know you guys aren't appraisers, but you have to deal with it. We want to be able to find comparisons quickly. We want to be able to find properties. Find out the characteristics. Has this one been updated? Has this property been changed? And you have to report it, getting it done fast. Automated data gathering. We want to be able to use traditional GIS tools that suit this task, but integrating the web as well as desktop. We want to be able to do queries. Where are three-bedroom, two-bath, between 2,000 and 2,500 square foot, sold in the last 3 months, so we can do comps. So the dispatching, right when I went up. When, we don't want to have to learn SQL. Up here, for me, that looks, I can read that. Most people can, starting from now. Select star from whatever table, the pending table in Megabyte, where APN equals a list that you provided, and values less than a number. You want to be able to ask those questions, not in a canned way, but have a way of asking through the same form, the same dialogue box, if you will, and ask a similar question multiple different ways. And I'll show you that a little later. Like right here. We want to be able to change that. If you see where it says APN starts with, and below that says greater than, click on those and be greater than, less than, equal to, contains. You know, if someone's got one of these big, long names, we've got lots of Dutch people, Van, Vanderhoosen, Vanderkamp, Vander. Just put Van and start with G, and then you can just query it that way. Year built, all of those, you want to be able to ask the same question, different ways to get different data back. And then get the results and get it in a way that's pertinent to you. And then be able to go look at it by clicking on Go button. On the mapping side, which relates more to you, we want to have tools that allow us to graph things quickly. Do the survey work, get code. We don't want to have to worry about being civil engineers or mappers. We want to just put in that bearing distance, like I was talking about just before I came up here. You want to have survey accurate. We want to be able to do it fast for our reduced staff. We want to have something that costs little or nothing. The previous speaker was talking about a free toolbar inside ArcGIS. I've got a free toolbar inside Map to give away today too. So free is a good thing. Tools that let you access the data that's out there. It's been our company's philosophy to we use the colloquialism of beg, borrow, and steal. You can't really steal it. Beg, borrow, and get your hands on it any legal way you can, data instead of trying to recreate it. It's a real shame to have this department already having drawn something in electronic format, in whatever data format, it doesn't really matter. Whether it's shape, coverage, DWG, DGN, MapInfo, MIFMID, who cares? I want to be able to get that data, bring it in, and use it for my purposes. Redrawing it doesn't. It's just inefficient. It's a waste of your time and your resources. Because we've all got lots of work to do, and now we have less resources to do it. Bringing in contractor drawings, same deal. Want to be able to bring those in. And accessing the countywide basement. Most of the counties in California now are mapped down to the parcel level. If I'm going to be bringing in and subdividing off a new subdivision, this big 40-acre parcel, why don't go grab that parcel from the county base map and start with that? Try to use some of those things. One of the free things we have back on CU back there, if you're on Map 2009, there's a new survey toolkit that's free. Out of the box, we have angle distance, bearing distance, deflection, and azimuth distance. But with the survey toolkit, we can add bearing, and distance, which has been asked for. Plus a lot of surface creation. Doesn't really apply to you guys that much. But being able to import and export land XML. Civil engineers are starting to use that a lot. And then better data, point data support. So if someone just gives you GPS data because they shot the corners of the old property that needs to be subdivided or gave you any of those kinds of survey information, you can now bring that in and use it. Also, you can bring in point data from your GIS system and utilize it too. So the toolbar now looks like this. You'll see it. I'm not going to demo you guys to death today because I think you saw quite a few good demos today. I want to talk more about change and direction, but with a little hands-on. So the new bearing tool allows you to take two lines and find the apparent intersection. Your previous speaker was talking about doing a offset off of a line, off of a line for a lot line adjustment or recording easement that is 10 feet off. Well, now we've got two lot lines we want to find out there. We're going to be splitting or amending some lines. The distance, the algorithm it uses is two lines or two circles from a point where they intersect. Always comes up with two intersections unless they're just perfect. That's rarely the case. And then you just choose which one you want. Very simple tools to use. So in the back, we have CDs with the toolkit. All you do is install it, and it changes out the toolbar from where you had four COGO entry methods, and you have six. So those are back there. Keep hitting on up. The thing I really want to talk about is a secret inside map that has been there for quite a while, and most people don't know about. Very powerful tool. My partner Raymond and I were some of the people that helped get this thing started. And it's called Feature Data Object. Start off this slide as the Oracle Spatial tool to get data into AutoCAD Map from Oracle Spatial. Well, it's taken on a life of its own, and now we can grab data without translation, direct read, and without any kind of manipulation on the way of data from SDE, Personal Geodatabase, DGN, MGE if you're an Intergraph fan, old coverages, a lot of WMS, WFS, that's Web Mapping Service, Web File Service. NASA's got a lot of aerial imagery. If you need to go back in time to look at what a parcel looks like 10 years ago, 20 years ago, you can go on to NASA or just Google WMS. And you can connect into it from within map and get that image. We were working in Colorado with one firm that the big shopping center asphalt kept buckling over one corner and with water coming in. What's going on here? Went back to the contractor. No, I did all my geotechnicals, did all that kind of stuff. everything came out fine. This is a new thing. Went further back, the original farmer or rancher really, no, there was never a spring there. Went back in aerial photography back about 10 years, clear enough, there's a spring there. The farmer had dozed over the thing, kind of compacted it down for a while. The contractor kind of went, and then when they paved over it, after a while, it started to buckle. So they got a little bit of trouble and had to financially compensate the guy. So, I think the long story ends. The imagery's there, and it's very usable. But you can, with that, you can bring in different data sources at the same time. I can bring in ArcSVE data. I can bring in DGN data. I can bring in FMID all at the same time, LAMMID, bring in aerial imagery. Our county flew the whole county at 1 foot and 6-inch pixels. It's over 3 terabytes worth of information. If you try to bring in even a couple of those images, they're huge. Even if you've got 2 gigabytes, 3 gigabytes on your computer, it's going to crush because it's just a huge amount of data to digest. If the FBO, it goes out, since it's spatially aware, it says, all I need to do is view this area that I'm looking at right now. And it brings it in, and you've got it right there. If you zoom in, you'll refresh it. If you pan over, it says, okay, I'll go get some more. And it drops the rest. It's very easy on your RAM. It pulls one thing and one thing only. FBO is great for that. Because everybody's flying these days. There's tons of information out there. Not like it was about 10 or 15 years ago. We can bring in all sorts of stuff. I already alluded to that. SQL Server blobs now. SQL Server 2008, 2009, whatever the current version is, now allows you to store geographic entities inside of it. I'm a personal MySQL fan because you can do everything in Oracle Spatial with MySQL, and it's free. I like free. And it's accessing all that information in FBO, which is one of the demos I'm going to show you. It's the same one. You access SDE the same way you do Oracle Spatial, the same way you do a shapefile. You don't have to be a Oracle DBA to get this information out and utilize it. They made it very, very simple. So, in summary, efficiency. Not for productivity's sake, the overused word. It's a matter of getting the job done. You're gonna, the reality is, going forward, we're going to have lots of work, fewer people, and it's going to be for an indefinite time period. We work with the Bureau of Land Management, probably the largest cadastral agency in the nation. And starting a year ago and proceeding for 5 years, half of their staff are going to be eligible for retirement, and a lot of them are going to. The financial crisis has kind of slowed that back. A lot of people that were going to retire next year are saying, well, I think I may work a little longer. But they're utilizing these tools. FBO has been a big thing for them because they've got the Niles or whatever name you want to call the new version of it, but they've got their land base in ArcSVE. They bring that in with FBO and go off and do their survey out in the field out in North Dakota where mosquitoes are about as big as your hand, they say. So they're using this technology. It's not a CAD versus GIS. The blur between the two, or the differences between the two, have a definite blurry line because when you get down to it, data is data. And whether it's in this format or that format, it doesn't matter. I want to be able to use it to get my job done. That's what I care about. So, get off the soapbox on that. This is AutoCAD map 2009. Like I said, so over here, that's the new toolbar for the survey, the COBO tools. Now we've got, there we go, angle distance, we've got azimuth distance. Here's the two new ones, bearing, and distance. So they're there. The big thing I wanted to show you, and it's going to be difficult at this resolution, is FDM. It's over here, connect the data. I made the mistake of doing this at a higher resolution. Change my resolution before you. Like the previous gal was saying, that when you do something in front of people, it always messes up. So as we fire that up, the FDO is right over here on the side. Here we go. I can connect into ArcSDB. All I do is put in the connection name, the server name, the instance, and when I log in, it will list out all of the data layers available. I do the same thing to MySQL. It looks the same. Any ODBC connection you want to have. Oracle, same idea. You don't have to be a DBA to get this data. The raster image, you can go for the web or for a file. SDF or shape. I'm just going to go out and say, you know what? I've got some shape files on my root here. Go connect. There's parcels. These are in a shape file. There was no PRJ file, otherwise I would read it. I want to add those to the map. You'll see a blink. That's how fast it's going to bring it in. They're done. So if I go kill this, there's all of Sierra County. 5,000 and some odd parcels.
Glorious parcels.
Glorious. The nice thing about it, the data comes across with it. People have always said bringing in shape files are difficult because I lose all the data along with it. That's more of a training issue when you import them. But the nice thing about it, all I have to do is this. Click on make that theme active, and there's my table. I've got all the data, all 5,036 parcels. I can click on one and automatically bring up that data that's there. Click on another one, so the response time is very quick. So now I can take one of those parcels, take one of these ones that's a quarter section here, do an aliquot division to it, and now I'm well on my way to creating and updating the parcel base. So the takeaway for this is just, it is that simple. FDO is a really nice tool for getting to the data that I want to update. For Sierra County again, I zoom out to the extents. You want to be able to do, find out where the properties are, what they look like, be able to do some manipulation through the web, or also by adding zoning designations. Because, like in any GIS, the map is really just a graphical user interface to the database behind it. You want to be able to get that data, be able to manipulate it so the appraisers can do comps. Without that map that you guys made, they're lost. So you guys are very important. If you have last questions, I'll time out here. Because it is secure data. I want to be able to do parcel searches, street searches, census blocks. Let's click on that one. This is what I was talking about. You want to be able to ask the data questions without having, okay, I want my parcel and value, APN and value query. And then I want my APN value and number of bedrooms query. Then I'm going to have, you know, and then you have this long list of all these canned queries. You don't want to go there. You want to be able to say, no, I just care about APN today. Or I care about tax rate area. And I want to see the CITUS number that maybe starts with 99. And this one I want to have contains. So you don't have to have a canned query. You want to be able to do that with your data in different ways. And then you hit search. Comes back with 10 records found. And I want to go to this guy. And boom, I'm already there. All the information about it. Zoom out a little bit more. Click on these. I want to be able to do all sorts of different reports out. Create mailing labels. Do zoning, general plan, parcel detail reports. And now I've got all the information I need. At a smaller level, here's more. They took the same dialog box idea, but they want to pre-can some of it. Just some of it. So assess value search. They found it a little overwhelming to have such a big dialog because they had about 20 fields they wanted to put, so they kind of broke them up. But still, you can ask greater than, less than, equals, all of that there. Say search. Zero records. Get that right now. But different ways of doing it. Owner searches. You want to be able to ask the data different ways, different questions, different ways. So one of the things that I'm not going to use the full hour here is resources. We've got to look at our jobs in a different way. We've got to look at the way we can maximize what we're doing, utilizing tools, breaking down some of those old walls that this is GIS, this is CAD, and if you're on this side, you throw spitballs at that side, you throw spitballs at this side, or you just say, you know, forget it, I'm just going to redraw everything. That's not going to happen. And with fewer people, I know at the BLM, that was a big thing, a big stone wall between the CAD people and the GIS people. Because of the retirements and the necessity to get the job done, that's breaking down rapidly. Software is software. How many people still have a 286 that they used to work with? Now, we had them back then. We did work assessors' databases. We didn't recreate them yesterday. They've been working on since the old IBM 360s, if you go back. I'm really dating myself now. With 64K of RAM is all of it. That the data comes over time. Data is what's important. Getting the right tool for the right job, and that maximizes the job that you do, is what's important. A mixed environment, hey, I believe the tool belt. If I tried to build a house with just a circular saw, I could cut a lot of wood. As soon as I started banging, I'd have lots of bent nails, and soon I'd wreck my circular saw. You want to have the right tool for the right job. And for survey work, you want to have survey tools. For GIS work, you want to have GIS tools. For dispatching, you want to have web tools that allow you to have access to the data. Are there any questions? Yes?
Can Map3D access a file geodatabase yet?
A personal geodatabase?
The ESRI's new file geodatabase format.
New file. I mean, the one came out with 9.2 or 9.3, whichever the current is.
I think it came out at 9.2. I'm not sure.
9.2? I know the regular 9 personal geo databases. I would have to check on the current one. If you go to opengeo.org, that is where a lot of the FDO providers are at. And if you put in personal geo database,
OpenGeo?
OpenGeo.org. You can download providers for that. If you look over here on the right side, OGR, GDAL, those are all providers. OGR has a lot of free providers out there. Personal Geo Database is one of theirs. So I can't imagine them not, in a timely fashion, updating it. GDAL is another group that's done mostly raster stuff. FME, SAFE.
And do these only work in 2009, or will they work back as early as 2007?
You're going to have to, it will depend on each provider.
Okay.
Most of them, the FDO, it's like ODBC. It's not version dependent on AutoCAD.
Oh, okay.
So we have MDAC 2.5 for ODBC for years and years. I'm not sure what the current MDAC number is, but same thing with FDO. It's a technology. It's not owned by AutoDesk. It's open source. It's just like ODBC for vector GIS formats and raster formats. Safe Software puts out hundreds. They've got their FDO providers that they provide. They make FME, Feature Manipulation Engine. It's the hidden secret inside both Esri and Autodesk software. All the importer exporters in both softwares are written by Safe Software. So lots of them out there. The blue ones are provided by Autodesk, but the other ones are all OpenGeo, or the sponsors thereof.
Okay.
Any other questions?
You see, the last hour, the teaching this. Do you keep them in 209 or you have to convert that to?
No, you can bring in GeoGen through FDO. You have, I get that question a lot. Can I bring in JPEG? Can I bring in TIFF? If there's not a TIFF world file or a JPG file, or JPW, excuse me, file, or JPEG 2000 or GeoTIFF, where the position of the image is encoded in the actual image itself. Then it just gets put in at 0, 0. But if it's got its coordinates assigned to it, then it plops right in the right spot. There's another question over here. So go to opengeo.org. There's lots of good stuff up there. There's tons of third-party free software out there, too, for looking at things. It's worth looking at and checking out. So, thank you very much.